Itasca Water Legacy Partnership is hosting a day full of workshops, exhibits, tours, and a fish fry under the Rotary tent at KEXE. That is coming up this Friday, May 20th. You'll hear KEXE regulars like forest ecologist Harry Hutchins, Tornado Bob, Rain Garden and Shoreline Habitat Specialist Mary Blickendorfer, and fisheries biologist Tim Gaiman. They are among the workshop leaders. Twin Cities TV journalist Don Shelby will give the keynote address. For information on how you can register or be involved, call KEXE 218-326-1234. Don Shelby was a news anchor for WCCO-TV in the Twin Cities for 32 years. He's considered the most honored and decorated local television journalist in the country. He's won 3 national Emmys and several national awards. He's got a unique perspective on water after reporting from locations spanning the globe. He continues to report on environmental issues and science issues in his weekly column for the online newspaper MinPost. And Don Shelby joins us this morning on KEXE. Good morning, Don.
Morning, Heidi. How are you this morning?
Good. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much. It's always good to be on KEXE.
So when did you get so passionate about environmental issues?
About 15 years. Well, that's an interesting question. It wasn't called an environmental issue when I first began being interested in it because it was just called nature. I was interested in nature as a child. I would spend hours and hours and hours alone in a little woods, a 1.5 acre section of woods by my house. It was my refuge. It's where I went to think. I now have a backstory that it was my sort of cathedral, but I didn't know that then. It was just a lovely place to be and be alone. And since that time, I've always been an outdoors person, and I've always loved the outside. But I didn't know anything about it. I kind of knew it as a friend. But as issues such as global warming and water resource quality issues began to become news, then I needed to study it. And so for the last 15 years, I've dedicated myself not only to the study of these issues, but to the study of the studies. I'm not an expert, but you might say I'm an expert on experts. And I had to go to college. I had to go back and study the science that underlies the very studies that we're reporting to make sure that they're accurate, to do my best to run it through the filter of my own brain and my own research. And we started Project Energy then in 2005 that dealt with energy, environment, and the economy, and ecology, and that's kind of been the direction that I've taken. And so there's been a brand change between you and me and this audience. The half-life of being a former television anchor is about 6 months. So I'm putting that away. That's something that I used to do. The transition that I'm trying to make now is to become an advocate for the natural world. Sometimes that paints you into a political corner unfairly, I think, because people think automatically when they hear the word environmentalist, which I try to avoid, that you're a Democrat or a liberal or even a socialist, that you love nature over humans, that you care more for trees than jobs. I think that that's unfair, but not altogether not understandable. I think that it is understandable. But people then fail to realize that the 5 greatest environmental presidents in United States history were all Republicans. And my parents were Republicans, and my father was the president of the Conservation Club, and my mother was the secretary of the Conservation Club. So environment's always been an important plank in most of Republican history. Recently, it seemed to have changed a little bit. But so I'm just changing. I'm changing into what I was as that little boy sitting in the woods, a person who wants to argue on behalf of the natural world and the dangers that we are causing it.
You know, it's such an interesting thing about the politics and environmentalism, and I've been following your columns in MinnPost, and I'm forgetting the name of the gentleman that you recently profiled, but it's a very interesting character who approaches big corporations and is going at this environmentalism in a different way. Could you tell us, do you know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. That's Dr. M.A. Sanjan.
Yeah.
He goes by the name of Sanjan. I started the MinnPost article by saying it's only fitting in this flattening world that the greatest American conservation biologist, his mother tongue is Tamil, born in Sri Lanka, raised in Kenya, and educated for his higher education in Oregon and California. And he is the host of dozens of television shows. He's very charismatic and very articulate on the issues of science, but he spends a lot of his time trying to convince the very offenders that it is in their best interest, without regard to their belief in global warming, without regard to any of the exterior, what they call the externalities of economics, that it is in their best interest to probably not use so much electricity, because they can save a lot of money and make a lot of money as a result and add to their bottom lines. So Walmart, as an example, or DuPont or Dow Chemical, will put in brand new light bulbs, LEDs, in their warehouses, or they will redesign their buildings so that they can take advantage of new refrigeration techniques and better compressors so they can use a lot less electricity. The Coca-Cola Bottling Company and Egan, the foremost of the energy-efficient plants in the world for Coca-Cola, are adding millions and millions and millions of dollars to their profit lines because they're saving so much money on energy. Now, what they're not saying is we're not building any new coal-fired power plants. You don't have to say that. You don't have to add that to them. The fact is values can come to both sides of the equation by doing the right thing. You can make more money, you can make more jobs, you can become more prosperous, you can make a heavier return to your investors in a business climate by being more energy efficient, more conservation conscious. And you don't have to say the word global warming once. On the other side, people are saying, let's put up a solar array on our roof because we don't want any more coal-fired power plants that produces CO2 that's harming our atmosphere and warming our planet and desertifying more and more of our planet. Since 1970, there is more desert, twice as much desert in the world than there currently is. There has been a doubling of desert dry areas since 1970 in the world. And that goes to water issues as well.
We're talking with Don Shelby this morning. He is going to be the keynote speaker at the Water Summit that's coming up this Friday, May 20th in Grand Rapids. And it's a day of education, exhibits, and tours, and an evening that celebrates water, woods, and walleye. So, Don, let's talk about water in terms of northern Minnesota lakes, rivers, and groundwater. What do you see as some of the most important issues concerning water?
Well, first of all, you have to understand a geographic fact about the state of Minnesota. If we want to just stay in the state of Minnesota, water issues are global, of course. There is an amount of water in the world. We're the blue planet, and we're called the blue planet because we've got a lot of water, but most of that's salt water, unless you've got desalination plants all over the place, which are very energy intensive, to turn fresh water, turn salt water into fresh water, then you've got to deal with that which remains, and that's the 3% of fresh water. 2% of that is locked up in Antarctica and in glaciers for as long as they last. So about 1% of all the water on Earth is fresh water in the ground and in our rivers and streams and lakes. And we're a state of 14,000 or 180,000 lakes. I don't know what they measure from 1 acre up. There's a lot more than we think there happens to be. But we don't think very much about water. We don't care as much about it as we probably should, but if we look at it globally, there are just if you took India, for example, there are 200 million people who have no access to fresh drinking water right now. Another 200 million people who are under what they call water stress, that they're using more water than there is available water. And that's just one country. If you put it on a global scale, there are 7 billion people in the world. 3 billion of them have no access to clean drinking water. 3 billion people have no access to clean water and sanitation. That's a scary situation, and it's only getting worse because we're drawing down our aquifers so badly. We're polluting and continuing to pollute our streams. It's not an intentional pollution. It's not point source pollution because the Clean Water Act sort of outlawed that, so now corporations are not dumping chemicals into the Mississippi River unknowingly because it's basically against the law. But what is not against the law is a lot of the runoff that's coming from the ammonia and nitrogen fertilizers and that are getting in from our lawns or getting in from our farm fields. And those are thornier issues. So we have to look at the protection of what we have. At the same time, global warming is creating more water vapor in the atmosphere, which has to come down as rain, but it comes down in pockets. It doesn't come down in one single place. So we've got huge flooding events that are happening all across the globe. But that water doesn't stay around. It certainly doesn't stay around in the state of Minnesota because of the hundreds of thousands of miles of rivers and streams that we have in this state. There are no rivers really that flow in to Minnesota. They all flow out of Minnesota. So everything that comes down here as surface water in our rivers and streams flows away from us. So we lose a lot of our water. We're not retaining it. We can look up and say, well, Lake Superior is up there. We always have that. Well, everybody's eyeing Lake Superior right now. They're looking at that knowing that there is this resource. But that has suffered a drawdown that we have seen of late, and that is scary. But you ask what the main threat is. Mm-hmm. It's not just the amount of water that's available and our protection of the water that is available, but it's legislation. It's what people are doing at the state capitol to roll back laws that protect our water resources. There's currently a bill working its way through the state house that would change the measurement for phosphorus in the Lake Pepin Basin of the Mississippi River. So that's only measured 4 months out of the year instead of year-round, which makes it okay then for sewage treatment plants upriver to use those other 8 months to pollute Lake Pepin. That's a law that people think is reasonable currently. Not people generally, but the majority in the state house believe that's a reasonable law to continue to pollute. It doesn't seem reasonable to me, and I don't think reasonable people, reasonable voters, would find that very smart. They say, well, just fix your sewer treatment plant so it pollutes less. But that costs money, and right now people don't want to spend very much money. So right now my main fear is legislation that doesn't take into account the serious condition, because the serious condition, Heidi, goes beyond just potable water for humans to drink. Of that 1% of fresh water that we have in the United States or in the world, 67% of that is used for farm irrigation to grow food. And we've got 7 million now. We had, when I started doing Project Energy, we had 6 billion people. Now we have 7 billion people, and by 2050, they're expected to be 9 billion people. You have to grow more food, which requires more water. At the same time, you've got more desertification of the areas that you should be using as arable land that will require more and more water to feed more and more mouths. So we've got to be very conscious about what we're doing with this water, or we're going to be worried. And this takes me back to one of Sanjin's statements that got Walmart turned around. He just said, I don't think anybody is thinking about their grandchildren anymore.
I just am looking at MinnPost right now. You have a new post up there, too, that people can check out called Thoughts on Stupid Things Politicians Say About Climate Change. So, Don, for you now, you know, in a different life from as we knew you on WCCO, how does it feel to be able to say things like that in a way that you couldn't before?
Free at last. Because I have to tell you that I've always thought from time to time, there's some brilliant things that people, lawmakers do. Politicians, as far as I'm concerned, don't ever do very much except try to get reelected. I make a distinction between leadership, governance, and politicians. Politicians play to the gallery. They oftentimes will say exactly what they think their audience wants to hear in order to get their vote, because their main job is not leadership. Their main job, this is the politician, their main job is not leadership and governance. Their main job is to get reelected. They want to keep their jobs, or they want a job. An example would be a man for whom I have had over time great respect is our former governor, Tim Pawlenty, who was one of the national leaders on these issues. But since he has tried to appeal to base for his presidential campaign, has completely flip-flopped. He is saying what other people want to hear. I don't believe at all that Tim Pawlenty believes what he's saying, because I have had many, many long conversations about the need for protecting the environment, the concerns about global warming, the concerns about fossil fuel with him. I know he knows this issue, but that's not what he says. So Tim Pawlenty's become a politician. He was a leader and a very good one once upon a time. But that's the difference between, to me, politicians and leaders of government who sometimes are what Martin Luther King called the drum majors, who have to get out in front of the parade and lead it. It's a very lonely place to be sometimes. Leadership position. You have to say some things that make people mad. You have to risk your job from time to time when trying to do the right thing. And so I'm have always been down on politicians, because I've come from a political household, political, I want to say, not leadership or governance. And they weren't very sure. My family wasn't very sure what it was they did believe. They just were party conscious, because they knew they had a better future with one party in office, because they all had jobs, patronage jobs, and it sort of spoiled me on politics, but it didn't spoil me at all on government and on governance. But this has given me the opportunity, the freedom to not just be an advocacy journalist, but to be a columnist, so that I can express an opinion. CCO-TV gave me the opportunity through a little section in the news called Good to Know, but I never delved into public policy, because I felt that was wrong for a journalist to do. But this is great freedom for me to be able to report what I observe, even though it may make people angry, because, quite frankly, Heidi, I had to be very careful, and as all people in commercial broadcasting have to be careful, of not scaring away the audience. So you have to be sort of vanilla, bland, and try to attract as many people as possible. So it becomes a popularity contest. So you don't say anything too controversial for fear that you won't be very popular. Well, popularity doesn't mean anything to me anymore. And so I'm going to try to report the truth and say some hard lines. And if people don't like them, that's fine for me. I'm with the rest of the world. My job doesn't depend on whether I'm liked or not. My job doesn't depend on anything anymore, being retired.
You hardly sound retired, that's for sure.
Well, I am. I've spoken 57 times since November 22nd.
Oh,
and I've, on most of this time, it's been on issues of environment and global warming and water issues. In fact, the Rotary Tent is an interesting idea, because I spoke to the Minnesota and Wisconsin Governor's Delegation of Rotary International, and they've taken up water as a main issue. Rotary has for years. They just spent billions of dollars in trying to stomp out polio worldwide, and they've almost done it. They've almost got that job done. Now they're saying, what's our next big issue? And so Rotary has taken on water, and I think that's a wonderful, wonderful cause. And leave it in the hands of people who know business to figure out how to get a job done. And so I have great faith in Rotary to manage this issue and figure out how, because they understand sustainability from a whole different perspective than environmentalists. Environmentalists talk about having sustainable forests, for instance, because they like the trees. The people who build houses want a sustainable forest because they want the wood to continue to be there, so they'll plant more trees. A business that requires the use of water to manufacture their product want to be able to guarantee that supply line into the future. They want to be able to sustain their business, sustain their ability to employ people, and they want to have fresh water available to them. So it's really smart to figure out ways to conserve that and reuse water whenever possible.
That's Don Shelby. He's the keynote speaker at the event coming up this Friday, May 20th. It's the Water Summit put on by the Itasca Water Legacy Partnership, happening at Itasca Community College and also the KEXE Rotary Tent. You need to pre-register. It's encouraged, but you can call KEXE to find out more information. And Don, I know you'll also be talking about some of your personal values about water conservation, and I was hoping to get to that, but people will have to come out and hear you to hear more about...
Save something, Heidi, for me to actually
there you
give
go.
A speech on.
All right. Well, Don, it was great to talk to you, and we'll see you on Friday.
Can't wait to see you, Heidi.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you want to see some of the journalism that Don has been writing as a columnist, go to minpost.com and search for Don Shelby.